Hello and welcome to 23, the podcast for young, sharp-tongued and fucking fabulous people who love to talk shit.
Today you will be joined by me, Bella.
And me, Kelsey.
You almost jumped the gun there. You're like, and
no, I was laughing because you said today as if like there are other people on this show that host it.
Sometimes we have friends.
Yeah, well, yeah, okay. Okay, acceptable.
Thank you. So, Kels, want to tell me a little bit about your life? Catch us up. We haven't had a chat in ages, actually.
Yeah, I know. I have officially finished uni, which is so
our
exciting.
Girl's free.
Yeah.
To now navigate the disaster that is the job market.
Yeah, exactly. Which is really exciting, though, because, like, I mean, I'm a lot more energized than usual.
Here we go. We do love good energy.
Also a lot more anxious because, yeah, like you said, trying to find a job, which will be
fun. I don't know how you could get more anxious than you being at uni.
I know.
I didn't think that was possible.
Well, Nathan was like, why don't you just like take a break off and like to the end of the year, like don't start looking for a job yet. And I just said, you know me, like I have to do something. Like, I have to keep working.
But you can have, like, projects. Like, you could do project work up until kind of Christmas.
Yeah.
Just for fun, you know.
Yeah.
Spice up your life a little bit.
I love being burnt out. I thrive off being burnt out. I feel like that's the slogan of millennials right now.
We thrive on the burnout.
I mean, we've lived with it our whole lives.
True.
Yeah. Also, I don't know if we've said this before, but now I'm 24.
Yeah, so Kelsey fucked up our whole podcast situation.
Well, as Bella said, 23 is a
state of mind. It's a lifestyle.
It's a lifestyle, not a diet. Well, you know how people say that about veganism?
Oh, right.
They're like, it's a lifestyle. It's not a diet.
It's not an age. It's a lifestyle.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Not a number.
You sound so pretentious.
It's a state of mind. I like it.
Look, I like it, but I'm just saying you sound pretentious.
We're not rebranding, Kelsey. Soz. Okay. I've had lots of people also, because I've had obviously have this discussion with everyone, like, what happens when you turn 24? And I'm like, well, have I got a delightfully rehearsed paragraph for you? So 23, I go into my spiel and afterwards everyone was like, wow, you've definitely practiced that before, haven't you?
Absolutely.
100%.
What do you got going for you, Belle?
Well, I'm in my last week of uni. Which is,
that's crazy.
I finish on Friday. Actually, I finish on Sunday technically, but I'm just pretending that that thing that I have to do on Sunday doesn't exist as of yet. So yeah, I'm in my last week of uni, getting it done. It's actually been delightful because I don't have exams, which is such a dream. So I just have a few assignments to go and then she's out and then she's going to take some time to herself to read some books.
Are you reading anything at the moment?
Yeah, I'm reading Shameless.
Oh,
their book.
Nice.
I'm also reading Grown Ups by Marion Keyes.
Is that because you're trying to be a grown up?
No, I don't know. I just bought it because I was like, let's buy it. And then it's like about like the complicated relationships of like grown ups and how like they hide everything and then everything always comes out and then they have to like deal with the backlash and like the aftermath of pretending like everything's fine when it's actually not.
Yeah, well, that's my motto in life is just deal with it now.
It's really interesting, like the complicated relationships between, I've never quite thought about it being a kid in a family rather than an adult in a family and like what kind of like couples like mums and dads and uncles and aunties, like all their, like the dynamic between them and how they all kind of put on this facade of like everything's perfect and everything's fine. Whereas like in this particular book, like two of them have like next to no money left, but are still spending like way more than like they have.
They can.
And then like, you know, the other ones are like pretending like everything's fine when it's not. And then apparently it just like all comes out. So I'm excited and waiting for it to like all just become a huge disaster.
Yeah. Well, Angie Kent over the weekend, she posted, like she was in Body and Soul. Beautiful pictures, but the cover, like she made this post on Instagram saying how she thought the cover was a bit misleading. The cover was trying to say like, kind of like you do you, but it was kind of like pointing out how much money it costs, kind of look like Angie. When I first saw that cover, I kind of went, what? But then Angie explained it where it's kind of meant to be like, oh, you do, like if you want to spend money on your eyes or your lips or your whatever, then do it. I think that's what the crux of the piece was, but it just wasn't illustrated properly. And Angie called it out. And I was such a fan of that because far too often influencers let those things slide under the rug and that pisses me off. But she called it out as soon as it happened. And I was like, yes, girl, I appreciate you for that.
I like when people bring light to that too, because it just makes you feel so much, I don't know, I feel like we get shown so many false images and we get, you know, this like really unrealistic kind of depiction of beauty. I mean, that's obviously known. It's ingrained in our culture, but like, it's just nice when people who are in a position to comment on it and to say like, hey, like this isn't exactly what it looks like. So like, don't all get upset or like, don't take this literally because it's not real to the extent that you think it is.
I had to explain to my mum the other day what like an influencer does and how they make money. And she was so confused. She was like, what? So you just take a photo and people pay you to take photos? And Nathan and I were like, yeah, essentially. And she was like, but how? Like how? And we were like, well, sometimes I get, you know, at sponsors and ads and that type of thing. Mum was like, oh, well, that's kind of okay. Like mum was like, is that problematic? And I was like, yeah, it can be problematic when they promote really dangerous things. And mum just did not, she could not for the life of her fathom that people pay people to look and do certain things on a social media app. She just couldn't understand that that was a job.
Well, it's weird because I think because we've grown up with it, so it just makes so much sense to us. We would never think twice about it, really, because it's been so ingrained in our like social media experience and our upbringing.
If you had to explain to like an alien that came down to Earth what an influencer is in like one sentence, what would you say?
Pretty people who take photos of themselves for money.
Oh, I think you nailed it. Lives in Byron Bay.
There's just so many levels to influencers, though. I feel like sometimes influencers do get a really bad rap because they're, you know, there's this whole like it's so conceited and it's so fake and they're just like projecting this like false sense of reality to the world, which like there are a lot of really amazing like influencers that are definitely more up and coming, not as established, that are really interesting and engaging and are having like proper social commentary and exploring different issues. And I think hopefully, I mean, me being a little optimistic ray of sunshine that I am, is that like it'll transition from, you know, people are starting to be called out for these like fake images, fake portrayals of their lives. There are gaps showing, there are holes, and people are calling it out. So I hope that it transitions to a slightly more authentic kind of depiction of like who people actually are and what they actually do.
Yeah.
Even in regards to like the woman that just won Miss Universe, have you seen her?
No.
Miss Universe Australia 2020, Maria Fatil. Sorry if I pronounce that wrong. She just won Miss Universe 2 weeks ago. She's obviously absolutely the most stunning person in the world, but she has been sharing lots of ideas across her social media platforms about, you know, she's quite short.
Right.
So she got lots of feedback saying that like she would never make it because she's too short. She's worked in corporate for most of her life and she shared lots of information about being spoken about and discussed in a corporate context, that the only reason she's in that context is because she's pretty and people like looking at her. She's female. She obviously like is just there because of her looks. She's not actually that smart. She doesn't actually have the intellectual capacity to be operating in the space that she's in when she's actually so switched on, so smart, and like is really creating a space for herself and like creating some momentum in on social media for having really worthwhile conversations. She's got her own IGTV show and she talks to, you know, people across the world about all different topics, mainly female-based topics, but about how to be a woman in, you know, the corporate world, how to have open to a communication, how to operate, like, you know, the oppression that she's faced being somebody being a daughter of Indian migrants, all this kind of stuff. And I think it's like, I find it so wonderful to see people coming up in this space that are actually having worthwhile conversations and are adding value to our society.
Well, I think there's been such a radical shift between getting followers because you look pretty and then getting followers because you actually have important shit to say. I think it's like the era of the podcast almost. Like people listen to podcasts namely to be entertained and educated. But I feel like the education sector of podcasting is probably the biggest side. And I feel like that kind of spills out onto Instagram. Like people want to be informed. I'm all for that. I'm all for influencers breaking the glass ceiling.
We love it.
I'm here for it.
Do it more.
But then again, I am also not for influencers doing shit for clout, like doing dangerous and inappropriate things for clout. I'm not down for that.
It's a fine line.
Uh-huh, honey. So.
This is our temporary title. Kelsey may change it, but
today we're doing a highly scientific and very, very accurate comparison between The Queen's Gambit and Holiday.
You did accurate and scientific back the front, but I'll leave
it's fine. If you haven't heard these two shows come up in everything lately, then you must have been living under a rock, because these two have kind of been bumping each other off on like the Netflix top chart or whatever. And it's been really interesting because they're such stark comparisons between like their content. Like one is a shallow, lackluster, offensively misogynistic attempt at a rom-com, and the other is this wonderfully subtle ode to feminism. The contrast could not be more black and white. Like, it's ridiculous, and I find it really interesting that they're both being kind of in the top charts for like the past couple of months. Like, they both came out in October, I'm pretty sure.
Guess what?
What?
The Queen's Gambit came out on October 23rd.
Oh,
is that not just meant to be?
You're like one of those, what are they called? The people that look at the stars and they like take meaning from it?
I take meaning from everything.
Yeah. I feel like I'm not that type of person. You know how some people are like, oh, there's a reason behind everything?
Yeah.
Sometimes I think maybe it's just there just because.
You know, pessimistic.
Maybe, no, but I'm just, I think it's dangerous when you draw meaning from everything, because when something bad happens, you're like, oh, I'm failing because I'm a bad person. That's the reason why. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway.
I think positive-wise, it's fun to randomly draw meaning.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, but you have positive shade goggles on where you only see the positive things.
Can you just stop being such a positive dickhead, yeah, is what I'm hearing.
Stop being so cheerful. I'm not here for that.
I wish I could, but I can't. Sorry.
Yeah. So, okay, let's start with The Queen's Gambit. I am obsessed with this show. Everybody, you have to watch it.
It is beautiful.
I'll give you just a quick little, I'm not really good at summaries, but I'm going to try anyway. So it's about a girl who gets orphaned. She's got a whole bunch of family trauma. She's very naturally intellectual. She ends up going to, I guess, like an orphanage, kind of like a starting school.
A female
school.
Yeah. Orphanage.
Yeah. And she learns chess from the janitor. She obviously is like a genius at chess, like a child genius. She's amazing. And the show pretty much just follows her progression through young adulthood to adulthood to, like, yeah, get her footing in the chess world.
Who'd have thunk there was a chess world also?
There is. It's
such
huge.
An interesting deep dive into a subculture that I just didn't ever.
I was in the chess club when I was in primary school. Oh, I know. I wasn't
Kelsey
very good at it.
Kelsey Menzies.
Chess is actually so fun to play.
Yeah, if you're good at it, it would be wonderful.
Such a good mind game. Nathan and I watched this show and we were like, we're going to go get it. I wonder if chess board sales have gone up since The Queen's Gambit. They must have.
A little bit.
Oh, God, this was such a refreshing show because it felt like Netflix was slowly going downhill with their original series.
I thought so too. Yeah. Even their movies, like they kept coming out. They just kept churning out these movies that were like, kind of subpar.
Yeah.
None of them actually ever hit home for me enough for me to be like, I love this movie.
Yeah.
Not like traditional kind of, I mean, and I'm a rom-com like
slut.
Consumer. Yeah, I was going to say slut and I was like, that's a lot. Yes, I'm a slut for rom-coms. And I felt like I hadn't watched one in like the last probably 2 or 3 years that I really felt like a connection to.
They don't make movies like they did in the early 2000s, no. You know?
That's what this episode should be called.
Slut for rom-coms.
We're a slut for rom-coms and intellectual TV programs made about chess.
So there are a bunch of familiar faces in this. The main character, she's played by Anya? I don't know if it's Anya or it must be Anya. Anya Taylor-Joy and Dudley Dursley from Harry Potter, who's played by Harry Melling. I can't remember his character's name. I'm pretty sure his name is – oh, wait, no, is that his name in the
– Harry.
Anyway.
His name is Harry.
Harry in the show, right? Well, what's his real name?
Harry.
In both the show and
mm-hmm. real life.
Oh, that's a lovely crossover. And also the little boy of love, actually, Thomas Brodie Sangster.
Is that who it is?
Yeah, the drummer boy.
Cute.
He's in it. He's kind of like the bad boy chess player in it with a little, he carries a knife around. It's kind of weird.
A bad boy chess player.
Yeah, it's crazy that they have like a cowboy bad boy chess player
in
this.
A cowboy bad boy?
Who thought, that's a great character.
Yeah.
Who thought of that?
I love like the rebellious, like, but like incredibly intellectual male character. I'm all for that.
I think why this mini series hit such a high note with critics and people everywhere, because it has got to be one of the most accurate and authentic representations of womanhood. Like, she's determined, she's ballsy, and she doesn't have to sell or discount her femininity to succeed. It's not based around
the idea of feminism and her breaking down the patriarchy.
Yeah, no, it happens naturally because
when
you write about strong women characters, you naturally, the patriarchy kind of weaves itself in there because, I mean, it's the most oppressive force in lots of women's lives.
It happens in a really beautifully nuanced way in this, and I think that's what I appreciated about it, because you can see it. It is there. You are conscious of it, but it's not overpowering the story. It's not overpowering her narrative and her, you know, ability to kind of navigate through this interesting new terrain.
Yeah. Feminism exists naturally in this. Like, the show, it isn't the main focus of any scene because it doesn't have to be. Like, it's so subtle, and I think not having it completely based around that is what makes it enticing for everybody. Like, it's not jammed down your throat. I think too many times when we write about strong female characters, they're always like angry women fighting the patriarchy, or they kind of like do that whole girl power thing, but they kind of overdo it. And that's really not an accurate representation of what feminism really is. Like, it's about equality and basing a woman's success off her skill and her talent, not based off her gender. And I think that was another really good point in this, is that Beth isn't playing to beat the boys. She's playing to be the best. And I think that's what a lot of women feel like they're doing. And too many times we hear, oh, you're just a woman in a boys club, where it's why is there a boys club in the first place?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's like, I think this draws really beautiful parallels to real life. You know, we exist in a world, as females, we do just want to be the best. We want to succeed. We want to blaze our own path. We do subtly have to fight the patriarchy in our everyday life anyway, but it's not ever our core focus.
Yeah, no.
You know, when we're entering the job market or trying to get a promotion or doing a side hustle like this, it's not explicit in our actions. It's implicit. It's underlying. It's what we're doing anyway. And I think that that's what the show does really well. It really represents how feminism is integrated into real life.
Yeah. I've never started my day saying, yep, today I'm going to break down the patriarchy. Do you know what I mean? I've never started
It just happens like naturally.
That. It just happens naturally because that's what women do. Yeah. So it just quietly chips away at all of those patriarchal tropes, which is great.
I think another thing I really loved about this particular show, which I think we miss a lot in various productions, is the focus on intelligence. I love watching programs where the key driving factor or the key concept is focused around intellect. It's so wonderful to see that represented and to see that be such a valid function of living, and what you're striving for is to be smart and switched on and knowledgeable and intellectual. And I feel like that's so interesting, because I feel like in so many TV shows and movies, I mean, it's kind of incorporated in there, or it might be like a backing kind of story or a back narrative, but having it as the focus of this, I mean, there are so many like mind-numbing, you know, pieces of media that exemplify this, like, oh, we just, you know, I'm just trying to find a boy.
Yeah.
Oh. I'm just trying to get married. I'm just trying to do this. I'm just trying to do this. When they don't actually offer any like value or insight into like the human condition and into promoting the idea that being smart is fucking cool.
Yeah.
And it should be something that we're all focusing on. Like, we should all be thinking critically. We should all be practicing our intelligence and improving it.
I love how in the show, like, Beth is genuinely baffled why people keep saying to her, oh, you're a woman in a man's world. Like, she genuinely does not understand why that has anything to do with her success. And I think that reflects how we feel in a day-to-day scenario. Like, why can't we just base our success off our merit, like off our skill? Like, why do we always have to bring gender into the conversation? And I feel like it does come into the conversation a lot. And in some contexts, it's super important. We need to be bringing up gender all the time when we're talking about industry and government and structures like that. But I feel like far too often we always talk about a woman's success in the framework of gender. And I think that's so fucking problematic. And we do it to ourselves all the time. Like, I've heard my friends say to themselves, like, yeah, like, as you know, lots of boys get it and I got it too, like, how good's that? It's like, no, you got it because you're just fucking great.
Even to the point of like speaking, you know, to like lots of different companies, you know, for my job, it's really interesting when they like actively point out, like, I've had conversations with numerous people that have actively pointed out if they've had a female CEO. Never once have I ever heard somebody say, we have a male CEO, which is just like, it's so interesting that that's so ingrained in like being so such a wonderful thing. But it is a wonderful thing. But if we're not pointing each concept out equally, then you're adding to this social concept.
Yeah, it's like one of those things where, like, is it better to call it out or is it not better to call it out? I honestly don't know. But I don't know, I do feel like if we're constantly bringing gender into the conversation, then we're constantly going to be bound by our gender.
And we're still comparing them. The comparison's still there. If it's coming up in conversation, the comparison will always be there.
Kind of like on another note, the set design and the costumes in this were to die for. I started looking up like 1950s fashion and where can I get vintage clothing from. And I love how she is a incredibly smart individual who loves nice dresses.
Yeah.
Like you can be both. I feel like far too often it's either you're kind of like ugly and smart or you're beautiful and dumb. I hate that they're separate things. I think in this they kind of marry the two. I think all women are beautiful and smart.
In their own respective ways. Absolutely.
In their own respective ways. Well, at least the majority of women in my life. And I don't understand why we've
You can kind only of be one or the other.
Yeah, and I think this show just kind of perfectly represents what we want. You know what I mean? This is what we when we say we want representation in film and cinema, this is what we mean.
Yeah.
We don't mean like a girl walking around in a bikini going, that's not what we want. We want smart, ballsy, driven, passionate women. That's what we want.
Absolutely. So this miniseries was based on a book by the author Walter Tevis from 1983. It's a coming of age novel. And I think he makes a really interesting comment when he was interviewed after this book was released that he wanted it to be a tribute to brainy women like his daughter. And he stated that, "I like Beth for her bravery and intelligence. In the past, many women have had to hide their brains, but not today." And I think that's like perfectly encompasses what we're saying, that this, it's promoting intelligence, it's promoting motivation. It's promoting women being autonomous individuals, autonomous human beings, not based on their gender, but just being able to be strong and powerful in their own right and being able to set goals and meet them and, you know, follow their passion and follow what they care about, which I think was really beautifully represented in this, that she loved chess so much and it was something that she cared about so much.
Beth has like a huge problem with pills and alcohol in this. And what I loved about it is that they didn't romanticize that. They didn't make it look sexy. They kind of, it was a really authentic portrayal of what it looks like and the sneakiness of it and the quick downward spiral that can happen when you get in, when you start relying on drugs and alcohol. And I think it was nice to see that because, once again, all I've ever seen is like, you know, pretty women like drinking alcohol and it's like hot and sexy. They need to be saved by a man, that type of thing. And it was just nice to see an authentic portrayal of that. I think far too often people just make it look sexy and it's like, why?
Yeah, they romanticize like drug and alcohol abuse. It's like, it's not a romantic concept. Stop making it look aesthetically pleasing because it's just not.
Look, back onto like the actual chess world. Like, so among more than 1,700 regular grandmasters worldwide, only 37 are female.
Are you serious?
37. How crazy is that? Out of 1,700.
That's a horrible percentage.
It's a terrible percentage. And I think this show has been really great because it's brought up a lot of conversations around, you know, inequality and sexism in the actual chess industry. And what pisses me off about it the most is that the underlying sentiment is that women are dumb. And I said to Bella off mic before, I said, I understand the conversations when people say women aren't as strong as men. I understand there is a biological backing to that situation. I mean, I think using it as a blanket statement is completely wrong, but I understand. However, if you start saying that women are intellectually inferior, that's when I get my knickers in a twist and I will fight you to the death on that point. When it comes to intellect, there is no one is better than the other. It is completely contextual. We are just far too used to seeing men in higher positions and we're far too used to letting men in, you know, STEM and economics and stuff like that.
And chess.
And chess, apparently.
Which is stupid because how many wonderful, intelligent women are missing out on the opportunity to, like, follow their passion because...
Yeah. There was a line in this
female.
Where Scheibel, the janitor, he said, "You've got your gift and you've got what it costs." And for Beth, that was her drug and alcohol abuse. And it made me think, like, what's my cost? My first thought was, I mean, I don't know what my gift is. I guess my gift is like my curiosity, but then my cost is people just think I'm an asshole because I'm not afraid to open my mouth. But then I'm like, also, maybe my gift is my curiosity and my cost is the anxiety that comes with knowing too much.
Yeah.
Not that I'm like super, I'm one of those people, like I know a little bit about everything, but I'm not like a master at any of them.
Yeah. I think that's a huge That's a really interesting point. I feel this too. Like the more I know, the more I want to know, but the less I want to know at the same time, because you become so aware of the inequality in the world and how many amount of issues that people face on a daily basis. And it can be so stressful and so overwhelming to try and like understand and empathize and assist. And you feel like you can't really do anything, but then you still want to be actively engaged in like, in learning and consuming information, because it's so important, because knowledge is power.
Yeah. I think we all have our certain gifts, and I think a lot of them have costs.
Absolutely.
It's very deep and meaningful.
I know.
Well, let's like move on from this deep and meaningful. Let's move on from this deep and meaningful conversation.
To talk about something shit.
Let's compare this to Holiday. So just for everybody out there, I rewatched Holiday and I wanted to stick pins and needles in my eyes. And I noted down every single problematic thing that had happened in it. And obviously this is based on my own scale of what I think is problematic. But I came across 52 problematic things in 104 minutes, which means there's nearly one problematic thing for every 2 minutes, which is... pretty bad.
50%.
50% of the film is problematic.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty high number. But look, Holiday is essentially about avoiding being lonely on holidays by having a holiday instead. So like a no strings attached kind of agreement with the opposite sex or the same sex. They didn't specify.
So dumb.
Dumbest
so
thing.
Dumb.
The premise itself is just stupid.
It actually makes me mad.
Yeah. But look, I got to be honest here. When I first watched this the first time through, I was not thinking critically at all. I was kind of blinded by the lameness of it all, because I'm a lame person. I love lame content. I love cheesy rom-coms. I love things that make me feel good. I didn't even notice that I had kind of switched off watching it halfway through. But that's the thing. I think it purposely switches you off so then you don't look at how problematic it is. Do you know what I mean?
So you don't think critically about it when you're watching it.
Well, I feel like a lot of, I guess, news websites and other podcasts have broken down the problematics of... problematics? Is that a word? The problems in Holiday.
There you go.
But I'm just going to kind of spit off a couple that
Kelsey's
I came across.
Overview.
So there's this inference that you can't be happy single. Like, stupid.
Bullshit. It's Bella's bullshit to me. Yeah. Let's keep going.
Being single is the only way that you find out
how to be happy with yourself. Because you can't possibly be happy with yourself by yourself. That is such a ludicrous concept.
There's kind of this idea that there's a clock on how viable a woman is. Like, you're only good up until the age of 30. And then after that, you're kind of like perishable goods almost. Like, that's kind of consistent throughout the whole thing. That's been something that's come up in our friend group a lot lately.
Yeah.
Where we've been talking about, why is it that we have obviously we do have a biological clock. We know that. But we also know that, I mean, lots of women don't fucking want babies. And the fact that they're constantly asked, when I was 18 and I wasn't in a relationship, my grandma would constantly ask me when was I going to start trying out the men? She literally said, trying out the men.
Tell you what happened to me the other day, which is just so wonderful on so many levels. And it just makes me so happy being single. It's stupid. So I went on a date the other day.
Oh, yeah.
And my grandma and my dad were talking. My grandma is 97. She's lovely, but, you know, obviously at a point where she's getting older and getting on and just wants the best for me.
Yeah.
And she asked my dad, oh, has Bella gone on any dates lately? Has Bella seen anybody? And my dad said, oh, funnily enough, she's actually going on a date tonight. And my grandma replies with, oh, thank God. I was so worried she was going to bring home a girl because she hasn't had a boy at home in so long. And my first reaction was, tell you what I'm going to do now. Is go get myself a girlfriend. I am spewing. And then Dad, being the blessed human that he is, replied with, well, to be completely honest, Mum, i.e. Grandma, Bella's had a horrible run in the past, so I don't really blame her for wanting to stay single.
Yes, I love the backup.
But
from
like,
Richo.
Why is that necessary? I'm happy being on my own and being single. This is a fucking question you cop constantly. I was like, who's your partner? No, I don't have one. Oh, okay. And you get the like, aw.
How hard is it to switch the question from are you with someone to, hey, are you happy? Like, how's your work going? You know what I mean?
Can we just like change that opening statement to like, how's your dating life, to like, how's work? Or like, how are you actually feeling? Like, how are you going as an individual?
How are you today? Anyway, so that's probably like the worst thing about this. But here are some other really problematic things that came up in it. The brothers' relationship, where they literally know nothing about each other and they're kind of normalizing that it's okay to know nothing about your partner. Like, when that scene when they were like, oh, what's his name, was playing golf. And the wife was like, he plays golf? And then, like, they were making fun out of the fact that they knew nothing about each other. And she was, like, she was clearly upset about not knowing about her playing golf. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's toxic. Like, why are we normalizing that relationship?
They literally said in it, like, they've been together for 3 months.
Yeah. But, like, I mean, look, I wouldn't get married after 3 months, but, you know, No judgment,
but when it's like that clearly
toxic, it's toxic.
And obvious that you don't know enough about each other to make a secure judgment on the other person.
Yeah. Jackson, which is like the main, who's like the heartthrob in this, I guess. I mean, he's an asshole, first of all.
Okay, but Luke Bracey is hot.
Yeah, but he's in this, the character.
Oh, I don't like the character, but he's...
He's such an asshole, but spicy. He literally says, you know, nice tits and ass, whatever. In what world that turns a woman on, I do not know.
That bit made me angry, genuinely angry.
Yeah. Another thing, they were being rude to, like, service people and nurses. And I was like, no, do not be rude to service people. Do not be rude to nurses. Don't smoke fucking weed in a hospital.
Yeah, I know. That was just wild. And then, like, not getting in trouble and then putting it out on one of the machines.
Yeah,
I'm
like, what
level of disrespect are you showing right now? It's just like wild.
Also, when Sloane, who's Emma Roberts, by the way, the actual actors in this, they cannot help getting shit characters. I'm not going to just like completely avoid saying that word at all costs. Whatever. They can't help the characters that they get given. But Sloane, she said, always date down. No, don't date down. Like, and there was, she said it in the context of like, oh, I was dating this, you know, talking about an ex-boyfriend and he was gorgeous and beautiful. She was, the self-deprecation in this pissed me off a lot. And then she was like, oh, like always date down. You know, that's the lesson that I've learned. But it's like, no, don't fucking settle for bullshit. Like, also, if you are saying date down, then what are other women thinking as well? You're fucking Emma Roberts.
Yeah.
You're Emma Roberts.
Yeah, you're stunning.
Yeah, I just hated that. I just hated that there was no, like, rebuttal to that statement whatsoever.
The bit that got me heaps as well was the classic, like, toxic trope of males when as soon as, like, a woman's not interested in them, which happened with, I think it was, like, the auntie and, like, one of the friends, as soon as a female's not interested in a man, like, they just want them so bad. Like, they can't stop thinking about them and they can't stop talking about them. That drove me absolutely mental seeing that because it's so fucking dumb and ridiculous.
Yeah. There's also this kind of, like, normalization of, like, boys will be boys littered throughout the whole thing. There's too many talking points on that. The sister cheating and then never, like, that subplot, the cheating subplot.
That's what I mean. That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, and right. Oh, I miss it.
Concentrate.
Sorry.
No, that's what I mean. Like, that subplot was ludicrous because then he was so excited that, like, he'd hooked up with the chick but she wasn't interested and he was so interested. Remember? Yeah, he was, like, talking about...
Yeah, I just thought that the cheating subplot in general was just ridiculous. Like...
How it came out with no accountability taken, no explanation.
Like, they were like, oh, like, it came out and it was a thing. But then it literally lasted about 25 seconds, that whole subplot line. And I was like, dude, you can't just, like, throw that in there and not address it again. Like, that's ridiculous. And also they were kind of inferring that house husbands were losers, like, throughout the whole thing. That pissed me off as well because I was like, there are so many guys at home looking after families. They shouldn't have to get cheated on. Like, that's such a trope.
Yeah.
Also, the dumb blonde trope, that was also a thing throughout this as well with the ex-boyfriend's partner, new partner, which I didn't like either. Like, or if your ex-boyfriend's dating the typical dumb blonde that, like, you know, you're jealous of. The hot blonde, that's what it was. The hot blonde thing. The hot dumb blonde. I hate it.
I hate it too.
That actor's probably, like, incredibly intelligent as well. Yeah, and also, this is my last kind of main problematic thing that I came across, but...
I hope it's what I have as well.
No, I know what you're going to say. It's different. But at the end of the day, Sloane and Jackson would make a terrible couple.
Oh, yeah.
They are toxic. They've been toxic from the get-go. They have no communication skills. They're either fighting or fucking or pretending that they weren't fucking.
No two-way communication, no honesty. Their values are completely unaligned. Their moral compasses are so
off,
different from one another's, though. Like, there was just no cohesion in those characters.
No.
They would last all of 2 seconds and then they'll break up. It'd be like The Bachelor.
They'd be jealous, yeah.
It'd be like The Bachelor when they're like, oh my God, I love you, no, I love you too. And then like two seconds later they'd be broken up.
I can't believe we're still peddling this bullshit to audiences and especially young, because I mean, females are the primary audience for this. Like, they're the target audience. Like, I can't believe we're still peddling this shit. It's ridiculous. Look, such a stark contrast to the Queen's Gambit. It was almost comical that these were, like, the top two at one point.
I feel like that's a lot of romantic comedies these days, though. I mean, we're tired of this narrative. We as consumers, I think, even though we're... And it's so difficult because we still want to watch it, but we just want that there'd be more complexities to it, and we want it to be a more accurate representation of, like, how relationships and dating are actually played out in real life.
A movie that does a good job at kind of the reality of situations is Marriage Story. Did you ever watch that? It's about who was in it. Fucking Scarlett Johansson and I forget that other guy's name. It's about divorce. It's really good.
Adam Denver or whatever, off Girls.
Yeah, sure. I never watched Girls, so I'm just saying that. I don't actually know.
Yeah, but that's what, like, when it romanticizes pathological love, then we as consumers think that that's what happens, and then our expectations are set so high, and then it never plays out normal in real life, and we wonder why, like, the fucking dating scene is a minefield of broken communication, dishonesty, distrust, and nothing ever plays out the way you think it does, because... if you get fed this narrative, that's what you expect.
Yeah.
In my research, I found something really interesting, which just made me laugh, and I just wanted to share.
Share it, Belle.
Because I am a hopeless romantic, so I love romantic comedies and love romantic movies and literally, like, just want to live
you
in one of these
them,
worlds
you
so
them?
Much.
Someone said that the other day to me, like, oh, do you froth that? And I was like, what? Are we like a new name?
Did I miss,
like,
the memo on this?
Do you remember when people used to say frothing all the time?
Yeah.
Do you remember when people used to say schweps all the time?
Oh,
were we the only school that said that? Probably. Anyway.
But I just found it really interesting reading all these articles about, like, why romantic comedies are bad and why that we need to stop romanticizing these toxic relationships and how we need to move away from this and start, you know, consuming realistic depictions of, you know, what actually happens in real life. So while doing my research, I came across an incredibly scary but also kind of wildly ironic story. So in 1999, a gentleman was arrested for violating a restraining order against a woman. He was, by all accounts, stalking pretty much, and he was participating in the classic rom-com behavior, but in a real-world context. So he was stalking her, following her, sending her letters, showing up to her house with a boombox and playing music, running into her out at cafes, saying hi, and he got put into jail. He got fully locked up. And I just found it so interesting because in movies, all of these actions and all of these behaviors get romanticized and put up on a pedestal. A guy doesn't like you unless he shows up at your house with a boombox and plays you your favorite song. A guy doesn't like you unless he sends flowers to your house every single day for, you know, 2 months. And he commented, the gentleman who got locked up, and said, she was supposed to hate me at first, but gradually be won over by my incredible persistence, telling me that no one has ever gone to such wild lengths to win her over. But for some reason, her irritation never turned into affection. This is what happens when we do this. But this is what happens when the narratives we're consuming are based around these really unrealistic behaviors.
Yeah, so fucking problematic.
This is a really extreme case, but I just found it so interesting.
You, like, went to, like, the way and...
I know.
And, oh, my God, I can't talk today. It's been... I guess it is the morning time.
It is the morning time. I guess it is the morning time. I just found this so entertaining and that... I'm surprised this doesn't – I was actually entertained and surprised this doesn't happen more.
Yeah.
Which it probably does. It just doesn't end up in the extent of somebody being jailed for it.
Yeah. It's probably – I mean, yeah, I think it's internalized a lot. I think we expect things to play out like the movies, and far too often they never work out like that, and then we internalize that grief and we think that we are the problems. Like, it's meant to, why didn't it work for us? It worked for, you know, Keira Knightley on Love Actually. Like, why didn't it work for
me? Yeah, she got two boys.
Oh, rude.
When do you ever get two boys?
No.
That's the dream.
You know what? There are lots of, there are so many problematic things in Love Actually, but.
Oh, every romantic comedy, every romantic movie has problematic scenarios. Oh, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And I think being a young woman, navigating the dating scene, understanding how, you know, people function, this is something that I've really critically had to work on, is not to set my expectations so high, not to romanticize red flags, which everybody does, to be able to notice toxic traits and avoid them, and to be able to not fall into the trap of, if a guy treats me like shit, then he's obviously in love with me.
Yeah. I think like the biggest thing for me is that being in a relationship, I have to stop romanticizing that love is beautiful and it's, you know, you're meant to be happy all the time and it's great. And it's not like that. It's never like that. You have ups and downs, but love is messy and complicated. And like when you love someone so much, you also sometimes hate them just as much as you love them when they piss you off. And that,
oh yeah,
can be interesting sometimes. But yeah, I think like I used to doubt our relationship because I thought, well, we're not happy like 24/7, like every single day, like how we're not meant to be together. But then I slowly realized that, well, my love hasn't faded. I just, you know, we just are in a relationship and that's okay.
And there's just more factors that are coming into play here that we just have to work through
more
together.
Stresses, like higher stakes, higher responsibilities. That's just fucking life. Fuck the rom-coms. Actually, not fuck the rom-coms. You're kind of good sometimes.
Love the rom-coms, but critically analyze the rom-coms and don't fall into the trap. Yeah.
Watch them for entertainment, not for education, I think is the main, takeaway from this. That's the main takeaway.
That's what we got.
That's what we got.
And that's what we're giving you.
And watch The Queen's Gambit. You will not be disappointed.
Just for the clothes.
Oh,
if
just
nothing
wardrobe,
else.
That would have cost so much money in production design.
And her hair is so pretty. Oh.
I know. Do you reckon I can recreate that style? That like the wavy
let's have a
bob
go.
Thing?
I'm here for it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Belle, I think that's all we have time for today.
Wonderful. Wonderful. We hope you enjoyed
us
have rants about
just
Netflix
stuff that
shows.
Comes up. Yeah. If you would like to support us, find us on Instagram @23_podcast. That's 23 the number. Or you can follow us on Spotify or click subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
Did you just nail it for the first time ever?
Fucking nailed it.
Snaps.
Today's going to be a great fucking day.
Finally. It only took us, 12 episodes to get there?
So many episodes. Okay, Belle.
Lots of love.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.